And welcome to the latest The Game's Gone podcast with me, Tom Ross. My guest tonight is Bruno himself, former Aston Villa, West Brom, Coventry, Sheffield Wednesday, Watford, Palace, QPR, Cardiff, Northampton, striker. Have I left anybody out, Tomo?
I think you've covered them all, Tom. Eventually, we got there.
It was... I could have done 5 hours looking at your career. But, I mean... You're a lad from King's Heath. You're a Brummie.
Yeah.
King's Heath, a notorious blue nose area. How did you sneak through?
Funny enough, it was because Paul Dyson, I grew up with Paul Dyson, who obviously was a big Blues fan, and he would always be going down the Blues. But before I met Paul, I must have been a complete pest one day because my mum just went, your Uncle Charlie's taking you off for the day. So, like, he's come and picked me up. We got a couple of buses. We've ended up down at Villa Park. Villa in the old third division. Watched the game with him, had a good day out, lovely day out, everything's paid for. So, of course, you're going to enjoy it. And then a couple of times over the next couple of years, my dad took me every now and again. And then Santos came. I think I was 14.
Yeah.
And Santos played Villa in Villa Park. And Pele was playing. And there was a, well, yeah.
Yeah.
There was a guy called Coutinho there. It was a spit image of Pele. The way he played, the way he controlled the ball. And the two, I was just mesmerised watching the two of them. And but because it was Villa Park under the floodlights and that was me done. I was then, that's it, I'm going to watch this team. So that was me. I sneaked out from the Blues thing. I mean, some of you remember, some of you kept saying, I tried to sign you when you were 12. We wanted to sign you. So, yeah, I have to take with a pinch of salt. But yeah, I mean, I was always, once I'd seen that Santos, I was always going to be a Villa fan.
I went to that game with pals because I wanted to see Pele.
Yeah, yeah.
I wanted to see him in the flesh, you know.
Exactly. We'd seen him in the World Cup a couple of years before. And that team in the World Cup 1970 was absolutely unbelievable. So the chance when he came to Villa Park, you've got to go and see it. It was a must.
It was, of course, the time of the miners' strike. It was the time of only the floodlights at one end could be on.
That's right.
So what you did was you changed them at halftime so they were always in the face of the opposition.
Was Doug still in charge there? Doug would be
Doug orchestrated it.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, that's a Doug trick all day, isn't it?
But you how did you come then? Did you grow up in Coventry? How did Coventry come to be the team?
Well, I've gone to Bramwood School, and I only went there because the Latchfords was there and the Stewart Latchford's brothers.
There, yeah.
So I went to sporting school. My brothers went to Wheelers Lane. So I've gone to Bramwood, and a few months before we played this Sunday League game, and you know everyone goes before the game. Who's your best player? And they'd go, Tomo, like, and obviously, you know, shy retiring arm. I basked in it. And they were like, who's your best player? And there was this big kid. And he was about, he would have been about 5'10" then. He had sideburns, moustache, long hair, the lot. And we're like, he's a ringer. He can't play. Anyway, this kid played. And everything I've tried to do, I've tried to outpace him. He's read what I'm going to do. He's better than me in the air. He's stronger than me. So I've resorted to me default, which is violence. And he beat me up. A few months later, that same lad turned out to be Paul Dyson. So we ended up becoming best mates at Bramwood School. And then Paul got picked for the England schoolboys. I think he's 14 years of age and that. Paul got picked. Because of I had a few problems at school with my mouth and all that, I can't believe it.
Neither can I.
So they wouldn't let me go. I don't think I was good enough to get in anyway. Paul got into the possibles versus probables. He just missed out on the England squad, but obviously Coventry took him from there. Then Paul used to go to Coventry every fortnight and he stayed for a couple of days, whatever. And then he kept saying, you got any mates? And he said, oh, bearing in mind, they watched Paul, Andy Blair, myself play for Warwickshire. And they took Andy Blair. They never bothered with the likes of myself or a kid called Malcolm Percival. Paul recommended me in the end. He said, oh, my mate, Tomo, took me down. I loved it. I passed the test, as it were, the trial. I've got in the summer, pre-season. I've done every day pre-season. And that was it. They was very keen on me. We had a game on the Tuesday. It was the first team, the curtain raiser, against Ernie Hunt and all them. They had a guest selection of a few reserves.
Yeah, wow.
Anyway, I'm sitting on the bench minding my own business. And Bert Edwards goes to me, if I put you on, you got a goal in you. And so I went, goal? I've got a couple. Anyway, he's put me on. And most people have seen me play won't believe this, but I picked the ball up, controlled it instantly, danced between a couple of players and smashed
ring
it.
Ring ya.
Yeah, that was the call. So he's gone in, and Jimmy Hill's on the mic, isn't he? Jimmy Hill's gone, what a brilliant goal from one of our new young lads. What's his name? Thompson. Oh, Thompson. So from that game on the Tuesday, Alan Robinson, the centre forward, he's been injured. I ended up playing against Aston Villa. Again, Andy Lockhead was playing Aston Villa reserves on the Saturday. I was 15 years of age.
Good grief.
And from there, that was it. I was off and running. So they took me out of school, more or less. And me and Paul went down every opportunity, played in reserves. So I was playing reserves at 15. So I was all, they was always going to give me a contract. And so it became commentary. By the time I started doing that, the Albion came in for me. And obviously Sammy doing his bit for Blues was sniffing around. But by then I promised commentary I'd sign. So like, they'd been to see me old man. And they rang the bell, opened the door, Jack Hastings. So he's gone, I'd like to speak to you about your son. And he went, oh, Ian. He went, no, Gary. He went, no, you must be an Ian. I'm like, Dad, he means me. Anyway, they've gone into the spare room, the separate room. And I'm waiting outside, thinking I'll get the call in a minute. My old man comes out in the end. He's like, he keeps talking about you. I'm sure Ian's the one he wants. Because Ian was a bit of a windy winger. Like, I was devastated. In the end, I think a conversation was had. And my dad said, I was signed for Coventry. And that was it.
You, it comes through how much of an influence your mum and dad were.
Yeah.
Is that fair?
Yeah, massive. I mean, West Indian family, very strict, Victorian almost.
Yeah.
And to be fair, I mean, you've met me, like, and I have quieted down a lot, but I needed guidance. I needed keeping in control of, like...
When you were younger, you were Larry.
Yeah, I think I'm quieting down a bit now, though. So, my mum and dad were very, very good in respect that I never messed my dad about. He was a very quiet man, very retired, shy retiring. But when he went. My mum, very witty, very gregarious, is that the word? But great sense of humour, but very, very quick to violence. We used to have a belt. All West Indian families had the belt. Bertha.
We had as well, by the way, Celtic family. Catholic, Irish family. Yep, definitely.
You know, I'm coming from there. And every time anything happened, he just reached for the belt. Anyway, my old man would come back from work and my old lady would, guess what your boy's done, blah, blah, blah. And she'd go into him and he'd sit down, he'd read the paper a bit, he'd have his dinner. And then about 7 o'clock, he'd watch the news, spring to life. And then we would get Bertha all over us. I learned to try. I know how to push it far enough, but not too far, because my family, they were brilliant for me. I mean, I remember saying to them one day, because I score goals and I'll come back from scoring goals and whatever. And they say, how'd you get on? I scored 6 goals. Oh, great. How'd you get on? Got a hat-trick. Oh, great. No one ever bothered. So one day I've gone in and I said, you realise when I'm a famous footballer, you like getting nothing. I'm giving you nothing. I'm going to just keep it all myself. But obviously, it's the moment I started playing in that, I just looked after them. But because I realised how important they've been for me,
It's strange because it's so, I mean, and this is what shows you about the world and racism. I came from exactly the same background with a white Irish mother, Glaswegian dad,
who
was Catholic family. There is no way, even, and I mean, I had that, the belt, I had all sorts, and my mum was quicker on the draw than John Wayne. She could get her shoes off and hit you on the head with it quicker than John Wayne ever could. Because
they sound exactly the same. You could take me out of that and put you and your family and vice versa.
Exactly. And it was, were you the same as you grew older? Because I remember I was 40 odd and I remember going to see my mum and dad and my mum was moaning, blooming Trevor Francis. I said, Mum, for God's sake, that's all I said. Mm. From behind the paper, that's your mother you're talking to. That was me, old man. That was it. I shut up. Yeah. Even at 40 odd. Did you have the same with your mum and dad?
Yeah, I think I swore by the time I was 28. Every time I swore before, obviously I got the belt, I swore and I thought I've got away with that. And then my boy always tells a story, like I go in, I lean on chairs, I'm a slouch, so I lie on the chairs. And my old man would come in, you lean on the chair, don't lean on the chair. Anyway, the one day I've leant on the chair, it's broken it. So I've got to be like, shh, don't say anything, like, and I'm trying to bribe him, like, as soon as the old man come in, drop me in it. And he actually reached for the belt. I was playing for the Albion at the time. Boy, let me sort you out. Dad, I'm a grown man. But that sort of thing, we're like, they believed in discipline. They were very, very strong, strict on discipline. But it's exactly what I needed. I've got to be honest. If I'd have been left to in wishy-washy family who let you do what you wanted, I'd have been a complete nightmare.
You probably wouldn't have made it.
No, that's right, yeah.
You'd have had the ability, but you wouldn't have made it.
Yeah, they give me the drive. And also, they kept me within sort of boundaries with guidelines. I kind of knew
feet
how
far I could push it. Feet on the floor style.
Yeah. Even when, I made my debut against Aston Villa for Coventry, like. Yeah. And the old man come down, watched the game, And I played really well. But we got beat by Villa 3-2. I think Andy Gray scored two goals. Brian Little got the other one. But he debuts against Kenmick North. So I had half a decent game. My first touch in what would now be the Premier League. Ball's been played. Barry Powell's trying to play a ball to me. I've got the control. It's gone under my foot. I'm like, oh. You can hear the crowd. Just, oh. Anyway, I come off after the game. Like, I go in the players' lounge and everyone's patting me on the back. Neville Folger's done a piece with me. Everyone's just loving me. I'm getting so much love. The old man went to me, you're not control the first ball to you. What were you doing? That was the only thing he said about it. And then I got sent off playing for Villa. I got playing for Coventry against Villa. Alan Evans did his collarbone, apparently. I swear he jumped out of the way of a challenge and broke his collarbone. He couldn't play in the European Cup quarterfinal or something. And he ever blames me, although we love each other, ever blames me for that. Like, me old man, you deserve to go. You're too rough, you're filthy. You've got to calm down. What's the matter with you? It's about passing the ball. You've seen the Brazilian side play. They don't throw themselves about, fighting with people, arguing with referees. My old man was the straightest man in the world. So even when I played well, he gave me a little bit of credit. I mean, I scored at one time for the Albion. I was top scorer in the Premier, the top league, as it were. This is around Christmas night. And we're on about England B and all that and playing the full side and that. And the old man went, until you learn to control yourself, you won't go on. And he was right, in a way, because I punched Steve Foster playing for Coventry against Brighton.
Yeah, he didn't he?
Yeah, what he did, but every time the ball went down the other end, he was nutting me on the back of the head. I went, Fossey, leave it out, will you? He goes, there's plenty more where that come from. He just kept doing it, didn't he? And I turned and banged him one. Anyway, he never fell over, carried on the game. Ron Greenwood's in the stand, though. Dave Sexton calls me on the Monday. He says, actually, you did. I said, yeah, I didn't do too bad. He goes, you know the England manager was there, don't you? I went, yeah. And he said, well, Ron Greenwood says, he noticed you throw a punch at Steve Foster in the game. Imagine you do that in somewhere like Russia. He goes, you'd be sent off, and that's it. You're done. He says, until you learn to control yourself, you cannot get anywhere near it. I played under 21s. We won the European Championship, but in a way, they were right. I would have got myself in so much trouble because when I played, that was the only time I had freedom. That's when I really let myself go, if you know what I mean.
I mean, your family was a very sporting family. I didn't realise till now, a kid I got on ever so well with, and I interviewed loads of times.
Daniel Keynes.
I didn't know he was your nephew.
Well, I mean, Daniel has got a...
Big Arsenal fan, by the way. I'll ask you how that happens.
Oh, he changes, but whoever's winning, he's one of them, like, you know what I mean? He's a lawyer, isn't he? So whoever's on top, yes, that's my team. I mean, he does have a soft spot for the Arsenal, like, but and he keeps going on to me about Aubameyang and people like that. But Daniel, like, he had a company called Beyond 400, and he got me involved in it. So we worked a lot together. But we've got the same sort of sense of humour and same sort of idea outlook on things. His mom, my sister, is the poshest woman you'll ever meet. She's a barrister, but she's ridiculous. I mean, Daniel speaks quite well, but she's so frighteningly posh, my sister. But one of my brothers is a whiz kid at Barclays, and my other brother obviously passed. And my little brother's a teacher in Spain now. Little Keith, who played for Coventry as well. So
he,
really,
well, wasn't he, Keith? Keith was
Keith was a decent footballer, all left foot. I used to say to him, you're a bit like a poor man's Ginola, because he'd throw a ball in the box, throw his arms in the air. Oh, I can't believe I'm playing with these idiots. But that was my brother. But he had some ability. In fact, it's a shame. He went to Spain. It suited him playing over in Spain. Because the way that it was all based on skill and whatever. In England, it was a very powerful game at the time, wasn't it? It was a fitness game, very powerful. But Keith, basically, he's got a big mouth as well, which cost him, like, a lot of trouble at times.
I wonder where he gets that from.
I blame the old dear. I blame him now. That's just past the world. I'll put it on earth.
While we're talking, I mean, it was obviously a very proud black family. Very proud. Mm. Very, I mean, Daniel was rapid, by the way. I saw him. He was rapid. And was he silver or bronze at the...
I think he got bronze at the 400 metres in Australia.
Top draw.
Yeah.
I remember reading in your book about Cyril. And, well, tell us the story, Cyril, when racism struck at before the Millwall game.
Right, so we played Millwall down at the Den.
Lovely.
And the back shot to the game, like, as we get, driving other coach, we get to the game and that, and Ron Wiley gets up and he says, right then, we're going in there now, no one react. They're going to try and get you at it, don't react. So I'm thinking, like, because I've been there at Millwall before, but they're not going to cause us any trouble. I get off the coach, as we're trying to walk through, it's just a little cubby hole opening. There's a geezer there, blocking it. So I'm at the front, I'm like, excuse me, mate. Texas cigarette blows in my face. Now I don't smoke. So I was like, pfft. Anyway, I'm trying to barge past him and it's all half kicked off. So that's the start of the game. The game actually starts within, I would say, 7 minutes with 1-0 down. Within 12 minutes with 2-0 down, I've got the arm. I'm trying to grab the ball. Millwall fans have run on the pitch and I've grabbed the ball and this Millwall fan's trying to grab the ball as well. And I've gone, do you really think you're going to win this? And as he tries to pull it, I pull the ball from him, like, and some geezer hits me with the umbrella. So I drop the ball and try to go for him, like, and the old Bill comes on and he goes, you're causing a riot, like. So I'm like, they've seen what they should be on the pitch. Anyway, we get beat 3-0. We say, right, we'll see you at our place, like. So as we're getting ready for the game and that, we used to park by the school opposite the Albion ground. So as I'm driving in, Cyril's just walking past, so wave at him and all that, park the car up and that. As I'm walking back, Gary Owen goes, you see what happened? I said, no, I was just parking the car. Apparently, C was walking up and there was a black girl walking along the street and there was two Millwall fans. And they're like, come on, darling, and all that. And trying to grab hold of her, like, and she's a bit wary, a bit scared and that. And Cyril being Cyril, you know, cool it, my man. What's the matter with you? Easy, bro, and all that. Oh, God, you black. That's all they got out. Apparently, the old one too. Bang, bang, both of them down. And then he just dusted himself, carrying on walking. So by the time me and the Gio get there, it was brilliant. And that was the best night. I mean, I played with him and for 18 months and he was brilliant as a centre forward. But that's the best performance I'd ever seen from him. Got hold of it, smashed people around, scored a goal. Everything about him was top draw that night.
How quick was he as well, by the way? You played alongside him. How quick was he?
Oh, he was blind. He was blindingly quick. I mean, McAnally's quick. And Ian Wright, but Cyril's up there with him, like, because he looked so big and bulky, you didn't think he could move. Once he started moving, mate, people was in trouble. He was, the geezer was quick and he was strong. People bounced off him and that. But as you know, Tom, probably the nicest man off the pitch, so relaxed.
Unbelievable.
He was Cadbury's rabbit, wasn't he? He was like, everything was calm down, my man, chill. What's the matter with you? He's one of them, like, he was brilliant.
He later on in his career, I became very close to him and we did a few things together and he became a born again.
Yeah.
They became born again. And whenever we went to do's, the ex-players, we had a do for Bomber Brown. And they were talking about Ali Rob, you know what Ali Robertson thought. Oh, yeah. Cyril, do you remember when we had them two, but and Cyril, he didn't want to talk about it.
No.
But Cyril was a player when he was a young lad.
Oh, well, when I was at the Albion, we got a little club going, like, and there was Stevie Hunt was there in it, Cyril, Paddy Grealish, myself, and the wives and that. And so every month we'd meet up, we'd go to someone's house, we'd have a few drinks and all that, like the full game. Every now and again, Bev would just go crackers. She'd be ringing the club and everything, like, because we after the game, we'd all go in the players' lounge, we'd have a drink and a chat. He'd kiss her on the cheek, I'll see you in a bit, babes. He'd turn up on the Wednesday and she'd be ringing, where's you been? At raving, babes. And I said to my missus, one day, I can't believe he's away with it. She goes, you just try it. So, yeah, I stayed away from that one. But he got away with murder. When he was doing it, when he was out, the big man, he was out.
I don't see how anybody could fall out with him. He's such a... No. That smile and that engaging, he was as nice as they come.
That's right. Well, no one... Even when you're playing against him or people have the up with him, like, he was so, as you say, so nice, so calm about everything. Like, he was witty as well. Like, but everybody loved him. I've never met anybody got anything bad to say about him. Even defences that we smashed up at times, they were all okay about it.
I mean, we'll talk about all the managers and the games, but can I just say, I mean, that you had your tough times away from losing your brother was a... And I lost my brother last year, Daniel. And boy, I know it affected me, so I can only think it affected you, but you also lost your wife as well. That must have been the toughest of times for you to deal with mentally.
Yeah, I mean, I lost my brother and it was bittersweet because Villa got promotion and it was 2 days before the promotion. We had to play Swindon away.
That day as well, by the way.
Yeah, he was complaining about his back. Anyway, he's booked himself in the Priory, as you do. And like, I've got to see him and this is on the Thursday. And he says, oh, they're just going to do operation, blah, blah, blah. Did the operation. No one told me anything. I played against Swindon on the Saturday. Obviously, we got promoted. So I had a couple of drinks at the evening, as you do. So I went to see my brother on the Sunday and all he said to me was, oh, I've got to take some tablets as long as I live. That's all he said. And it was only 2 or 3 weeks later, that my sister, the barrister, like, has got really inquisitive. She's trying to find out what's going on. And then it comes out that he's got pancreatic cancer. 3 months later, he's passed away. So then I go through a spell where my marriage breaks up. I'm trying to drink and basically shag off in Birmingham at the same time. And my football was good. And
that was your reaction to it all, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, everyone copes with things in different ways, but I was drinking so much. I was out all the time. And I'm not a great, I go out a lot. I used to love to go out, especially with lots of shore in that, but I wasn't a great drinker. But then I was drinking. Still, football was the discipline I had. I knew I had to be at the ground to train. I knew I had games. So I behaved myself around that time. But generally, I was loose. And that was when my brother passed. About 5-6 years ago, my first wife, she just collapsed. And she was on, she was on private healthcare. And they did a scan and they found she had a brain tumour. And within 2 years, but to be fair, for 18 months, not a problem. She got through with everything. She had a couple of operations, but she coped with everything. Just before the Christmas, and when she passed, she blew up like a balloon. They had to do an operation. So basically she could have Christmas with the grandkids. Because she loved off that we got 5 now. He had another one the other day, but at that time we had 2, nearly 3 grandkids, and she doted on him like. And so obviously, when she passed, it was a massive blow. I've known Lou since I was 17.
Yeah.
And even when we fell out, I mean, she actually divorced me because women have no sense of humour. But she actually divorced me. So but we stayed friends. We stayed. We got on all right. And so it was a massive blow when that happened as well. And then after that, not long after that, it was me dad passed, and obviously Cyril, my mom. And it was like every time I turned, my school teacher, Mr. Williams, he was the one at 14 who actually explained to me about giving a damn about myself and not wasting my career, wasting what I had, what talents I had. He was the one that actually took me to one side. And when he passed as well, I remember someone saying, "You're taking it all personal." But it's hard not to, because everywhere you turn, you hear someone you know is dying.
It is. It gets here, and as I say, I've been there. So, how you dealt with both those things and trying to forge a career and work and family, it's tough. Back to the football side. I mean, I couldn't believe how many great players you've played alongside.
Funny thing is, I'm sure they all say the same thing about me as well. I played with Big Tomo, you know. I can see you bite your lip there, Tom. You're desperate.
They lived off you. Took all the kicks and the punches, and they lived off you.
I'm not one to just take all the credit and all that, but really, anyone that saw them play them games, it was all about me, really, wasn't it? Now, to be fair, I played with from Ian Wallace when I started off as a kid at Coventry, Mark Aitley. I mean, Ian Wallace was different. Him and Fergie is a partnership, different class, and I had to try and break into that. And like Tommy Hutchison, possibly... He's got the you played against him.
Toughest finger on the planet.
He could dish it out, but he could cross the ball. As a centre forward, he'd drive you mad because he checked back and checked back and checked back, beat another man, checked back. And he chose to get in the box. But he had an acid tongue. But when you did well, he let you know. Tommy Hutchison was brilliant.
He's one of the trenches, best ever player. Won him in the trenches with you.
Oh, all day. So there's him. Terry Yorath played with at Coventry. People don't talk about it, but Mick Coop. He's one of the best pullbacks I ever played with. Barry Powell at Coventry, obviously Hateley, Danny Thomas coming through. We had Tom English, Jacobs, Whitten, who went to the Blues, Stevie Whitten.
What a good player, Stevie Whitten.
Because you looked at his size and his shape and you thought, nah, he can't move. The kid could smash the ball. His first touch was one of the best I've ever seen. Steve Whitten was a very, very good footballer. Bodak. But Bodak will tell you all about his
Bodak's the name, goals every game.
Exactly. Mind you, anyone that chipped Joe Corrigan and gets away with it, you got to say fair play. That was some goal, wasn't it?
Some goal on the telly, wasn't it?
Oh, well, during that game, we played Man City in the FA Cup, and it's a dying mix. They're throwing the Alamo, they're throwing everything at us. Ian Butterworth's come off the bench. He's controlled the ball, give it to Bodak, about 4-yard pass. Bodak has run 70 yards, chipped Joe Corrigan, and now when you talk to Butterworth, what a great assist that was. And we was all right. What's he done? Mind you, it drove Bodak mad because he said, "I've just dribbled 70 yards, chip Joe Corrigan." And all you see is Bodak sliding in the corner. There's two men and a dog going like that. It's brilliant.
It was, I mean, they were great. But even at West Brom, you've talked about Cyril. Yeah. Great players there, didn't you? At Brendan Batson, Cyril. I mean, great players at Villa, McAnally. Ian Wright at Palace, you played with, for goodness
sake. Les Ferdinand at QPR. Everywhere I went, I was lucky that I walked into places. Coventry, I didn't realise how easy football was. because this seemed to come easy, but it was all about the way to pass to me, the positions people were taking off me. They made it so, so simple. I went to West Brom and it was almost the same thing again. I'm playing with a great centre forward who's coaching me through games, scoring goals and that. I go to Sheffield Wednesday and he likes to be a bit direct. So and you think that would suit me, but really the way they played, I'm like, you're going to be there, you're getting it down and all that. But at Sheffield Wednesday, Mel Sterling was there, Gary Shelton, Gary Megson, Paul Hart, proper characters. Then I come to Villa, McAnally's there, Simon Stainwright, Andy Gray, the white and the black Andy Gray there, David Platt, Sid Cowans. So all through my career, I've gone and I've played with some very, very good players. Oh, yeah. I mean, QPR was Wilkins, Les Ferdinand. I mean, Ray Wilkins, people used to give him so much stick. He's one of the best footballers ever. You just don't give the ball away. He said he learned it in Italy.
They actually used that as a criticism against him in the end.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's the biggest strength of all is not giving the ball away.
Because he kept saying, if I give it away, we got to chase and get it back. He was brilliant. But a lovely fellow as well. When I went to QPR, Ray organised, as soon as I got there, right, we're all off. I had an Italian meal, a few bottles of wine, just get so the players could get to know me. Mickey Lyons did the same at Sheffield Wednesday.
Yeah. And
players are different like that. They just make you feel welcome straight away. But QPR was a hell of a club for socialising. Obviously in London, Ferdinand was doing a business. Wegley, who was one of the most underrated players ever, Roy Wegley, brilliant footballer. So I played with some great players. Nathan Blake at Cardiff, for example.
Nathan, a local lad, by the way, as well, isn't he? He's from round here, Nathan Blake.
Is he, Blake?
Yeah, I think he's from round here, Blake. I spoke to him a few times.
Yeah.
He's a little player. Played for Wales as well, didn't he?
Yeah, he played for Wales, yeah.
Yeah,
top player. He's the loudest man. I turned up at Cardiff and Eddie May had said to me, I tried to sign me up with QPR and I'm obviously going to leave QPR. My contract's ended. And Jerry promised me another contract. So then the final game of the season, Jerry calls it, big man, come over here. I've gone over. He says, I battle with the chairman. I've got you a free. I was like, you fucking what? I've got you a free transfer. Hang on a minute. Anyway, in a bit before that, Eddie May tried to sign me. So I've said I want this and I asked for ridiculous money. And he went, fuck me, son. I could get Maradona for that. So the deal didn't happen. Anyway, I'm getting free. I've got a chance to go to Belgium, a couple of other places. Eddie May rings up. He says, do you want to talk properly now? And I went, well, yeah, we can have a conversation then. He says, come over to... They went to Ireland. They were playing a pre-season friendly. I went over there, played a couple of games, had to do my initiation. So I sang In the Ghetto. Oh, rocked the place out. I mean, I'm not one to blow my own trumpet, but it was a joy to be
In the Ghetto.
Oh, yeah. I just dropped it off. Anyway, you had to get up and sing and all that. Eddie May went to me, well, basically, your singing's crap, but we might sign you. But he didn't end sign me. I had 2 years there. I walked in the hotel, and Blakey was by the reception. He looked at me and went, you walk like a footballer. Are you a footballer? I went, well, yeah, I played a bit of time. So he said, who are you? I was like, hang on a sec, who are you? And that's how our first conversation with Nathan Blake started. Brilliant. But what a footballer.
Brilliant. So people forget, we talk about you and everybody knows you're hardworking. You could dish it out. You took the brunt of the stick and you... But you actually played in Europe for Palace, didn't you? Was it Palace you played in Europe?
No, I played in Europe with Cardiff.
Cardiff, sorry. Yeah, go on. I knew you played in Europe.
Yeah, we played Bruges and in the Cup Winners' Cup because Cardiff always won it, or Swansea always won it. Anyway, they won it the year before. And that's part of the reason Eddie tried to sign me, he wanted a bit of European experience. And I was like, I ain't got any, because you'll have some soon. So anyway, we go over there. We play Bruges and that, and about 15 minutes into the game, I've gone to clash with a lad, split me boot. So I've gone, I need a new boot. Anyway, I've got to the side of the pitch. While I'm at the side of the pitch changing my boot, they go down across, keeper makes a blinded save, walking at half-time, and then he goes, you fucking numpty. I went, what? He says, yeah, walk off the pitch. We've got 10 men. I goes, I had a sock. I couldn't play. Anyway, me and Eddie square off, and I'm thinking, if they let him go, he's going to kill me. I mean, Eddie May had the biggest head you've ever seen, but his hands were huge as well. Well, he's me one of them, he's going to knock me out. So I'm about to front it out, but Eddie would have killed me. But yeah, Bruges beat us. Then we went back to our place and they did us there as well, but it was a great experience.
Unbelievable. Jack Charlton, the late, great Jack Charlton, had a little black book, he used to say, with a few names. Yeah. Did you have any players that you waited for the opportunity?
When I first started, there was a kid called Hugh Dowd who played for Sheffield Wednesday. And this is reserve football. So this kid was like granite. He just booted me all over the place. And I kept thinking, oh, one day I'm going to get him. Like, and then by the time I was just breaking into the first team, I played against him again and I tore him apart, but not physically, just too quick. I scored a couple of goals and that. And then I thought, well, I was wasting all my energy and time and I've got to sort him out. I remember seeing Terry Urath and Malcolm McDonald set to each other, Coventry versus Arsenal, at a Highbury. I was supposed to make my debut. And because of shenanigans, Gordon left me on the bench. They didn't put me on. Like, I warmed up for about half an hour in front of him. Just wouldn't. You know the marble floor, isn't it? It's heated, isn't it? So they all go out to warm up. So I'm with George Dalton. And I'm going, George, it's heated. He went, yeah, son, you're at the Arsenal. Anyway, I'm picture the scene. I'm naked, and I got my briefs on, but I'm lying on the floor going, oh, this is beautiful. He went, get up. If the gaffer comes in, you're in trouble. Anyway, I'm messing about. The door opens, but I got me back to it.
Oh, no.
And I went, and he looked at me, and I went, no, it isn't, is it? The door closed again. So I never knew who it was, but I thought, I bet it's Milne. After, I would say 50 minutes, I think, right, I'm going to get on. We ain't got to centre forward. Ian Wallace is playing in front of his own. Going to put me on. I limber up in front of Milne. I do stretches in front of Milne. I do everything. He just keeps looking past me. Doesn't put me on. And then on the Monday, Ron Wiley gave me the curly finger. Took me to the office. And he went, do you want to be a clown or a footballer? I went, no, you know I want to be a footballer, Ron. And he went, well, in future, warm up properly, behave like a proper footballer, train properly and all that. You might get a chance. I think it was 18 months before I got my debut.
Wow. I know that you weren't, I mean, it's fair to say you, that sometimes, just sometimes, your temper could get the better of you. As I think Alvin Martin found out one time, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, me and Alvin, I think his debut was my third game. And so we were both 17 years of age, knocking lumps out of each other. And this went on for 25 years, like, or 20 years. My final game, I think his manager, Leighton Orient, player manager, he's on the he's playing and he's organising everything. Ian Atkins is on the bench with me. Atkins is like, get on. Last 20 minutes, ruffle him up a bit, big man, get a goal and all that. I get on. I just smash into Alvin Martin. Apparently, he did his collarbone in a challenge with me, which nearly stops him going to the 82 World Cup. And I don't think he bears the grudge anyway. So I spoke to him a couple of times. He seems all right. Anyway, I'm chasing this ball down the line. Me and Alvin, it must be the slowest race ever. We got the cleaner ladies and all that coming past us and that. We end up grappling, falling on the floor, and we're rolling about. Anyway, I draw back to punch him. And like, I think, what are you doing? And that's the last time I played. I said to Akers after, I ain't doing that anymore. And I ended up coaching the kids. But yeah, me and Alvin, for 20 years, we were bang at it. Like, I mean, what a player, what a bloke. So I meet him sometimes doing the radio.
Yeah, lovely fella. I'm great with Alvin. I like him.
Yeah, he's good lad, good lad.
We've talked about your strikers. Just have a little look at some of the managers. Gordon Milne, Bobby Gould, I think, was your manager for a while at Coventry.
That he was my little brother. Gouldie tried to sign me again. Once I left Coventry and went to West Brom, first Gouldie was manager, then Don Mackay was the gaffer. And they turned up at my house one day to try and sign me. I was at the Albion. And like I've gone, I'm the door. Bearing in mind, my little brother has been playing in reserves. And like, there was a young kid playing in reserves and Gouldie came in at half-time and he slaughtered this kid and the kid was nearly in tears. He's gone into the showers. My little brother's followed after him. So my little brother's like, what are you listening to him for? We're bottom of the fucking table. He's fucking hopeless. The geezer's a fucking idiot. Anyway, the kid that's crying looks up and Keith goes, you're joking. Gouldie's behind him, isn't he? Oh. So that was it. So Keith basically got farmed off to Spain not long after that. So like, I've always had a thing about Gouldie anyway. So when they turn up on my door, when they sign me, I'm like, ah, no, I'm scoring goals at Albion anyway. I said, you got to get permission. So I said, do it all properly. But they were very, very persistent, really keen to sign me. They wanted to link myself and Cyril up again. But no, I mean, Gouldie, not for me. I mean, even at Jimmy Hill's funeral, Bobby, come on. And you'll have it. People have it on film and that. But he did a talk and that, but basically talks about himself. But to be there thinking, what's going on? But that was Bobby Gould. I mean, he's never one shy to publicise himself. But yeah, Gordon Milne was my first ever manager. Him and Ron Wiley, good cop, bad cop. Gordon is the loveliest man in the world. Very personable. You don't want to upset him. You don't want to I don't want to make Gordon angry or disappointed. He called me one day. I'd scored a couple of goals in the League Cup semi-final and I hadn't scored for about three or four games after before the second leg. and I played, I think it was Wolves or someone, Norwich, we played on Saturday, and it was been a crap game, nothing happened. I think I beat 1-0, and he came up, and he had a go at me after the game, and then John Sillett pulled me and said, you know, he's only having a go because he loves you, big man, because he thinks you can do better and all that. And but I was really hurt because Gordon, you never upset Gordon. He was such a lovely fella. When he was disappointed in you, it was like Ron would abuse me all day. Sorry for the Albion, Ron bullied me to sign the contract. But I knew what Ron was like. Gordon never want to upset him. So I have to say,
like your dad, you don't want to let him down.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But Gordon was brilliant, but lovely, lovely fella. But him and Ron worked well together.
Every Albion player I know, Bomber Brown, Ali Robb, all of them, they say, best manager ever played for Johnny Giles. Where do you stand?
Johnny Giles, I think Cyril said it to him, that when he came back the second time, no, he'd lost a bit of hunger, but it wasn't the same because Johnny was playing the first time, wasn't he? He was the hub of it all, like,
this time of day,
and he managed it. He had Norman on tap. Norman was brilliant because Norman kicked me in training every day. Got to get toughen you up, big man. Got to toughen you up. And Nobby was taking the kids and that. So they had a good crew around him. John knew the game. Very, very bright. He always used to do set pieces and he'd say, right, I'll show you it three times. If you can't grasp it, you shouldn't be here. Me and Nicky Cross, not the sharpest at that time because we were always looking for the comedy angle. We start pooing our pants because if we get it wrong, Johnny Giles is going to bin us and all that. And to be fair, he kept you on your toes, John. Wanted to play football. I just think... I think circumstances went against him a little bit because, yeah, if you look at our squad, like some McKenzie and Bennett and people like that, we should have done a lot better than we did.
And like Martin Bennett, by the way, you talk about centre halves. How tricky is Martin Bennett?
Well, that's the reason I didn't want to go to the Albion initially when Jimmy Hill, they've tried to bully me at the signing. Jimmy Hill's gone, he's rang me up one day. My missus is pregnant. We've been out all day. Got back at 9 o'clock, picked the phone up. Where the fucking hell you been? I'm like, hello, Mr. Chairman. How you doing? He says, oh, where have you been? I says, well, the wife's pregnant. We've gone shopping, bought some baby stuff and that, went for a bit of food, lovely bit of Italian, came back home. He's gone, well, enough of that. He says, you're going to Albion tomorrow. Ron will look after you. You've got to sign the contract. All the best. Put the phone down. I'm like, what? Anyway, call him back. I says, I'm not going anywhere. They turned down £1 million for me. That was it. I said, how much are you asking for? He went, that's nothing to do with you. All right. So I said, well, you turned down 750 last year from Arsenal and Leeds, and now you're just trying to get me out the door. No, I'm quite happy. Missus, you're pregnant. No need to rush anywhere. He went, we get 6 weeks from going bankrupt. You are going to go. Put the phone down again. So the wife talks me into going. So I've gone to the Albion next day. But I'm not going to sign because Ali Robb and John Wall booted me from pillar to post. And when they got bored of it, Martin Bennett took over. So I'm thinking, well, hang around with these four, like. I go up to the Albion, I meet Ron, they show me around and everything. They try and talk me to sign it. He's offered me something like $550 a week and $25,000 signing on fee, company car and all that. But it was everything I was getting a commentary. So I'm like, where's the incentive? You're getting a bloke with me again, sign his contract. Anyway, I says, look, they owe me $10,000. So I said, no, listen, he says, you come show me $10,000. If they give me the $10,000, we've got a deal. I said, but I can't go with that $10,000. I've got family on the way. Anyway. They speak to Jimmy Hill. Jimmy Hill rings me back. He says, what's all this? I says, you owe me £10,000 loyalty bonus. I'm not asked for a transfer. He goes, £10,000. 40p in the pound tax. He says, so that's £6,000, isn't it? He goes, so we're talking about £6,000. £6,000. He says, I've seen you in them stupid tonic suits, you and your mate Tom English. He goes, you'll probably buy yourself a fancy car and all that. He says, so really, you're talking about £3,000. He says, you're a few nights out, a bit showing off and all that. You're down to £2,000, don't you? I'll give you £2,000. How's that sound? It sounds like £2,000, but that sounds like I would have signed for. Goes, I can't believe you players. Anyway, the Albion have agreed to give me £3,000. I'm still not going to sign. Ron Wiley then puts the contract in front of me. And Ron's words were, you've got 10 minutes, sign this contract or fuck off. Walked out the door. Close the door. 9 minutes. After a minute, I'm like, no way am I letting him talk me into it. I've been bullied all my life. I'm not signing. I'm not having this at all. No chance. He can go fuck himself. 7 minutes to go. Oh, the wife's pregnant. Might not be the most stupid thing in the world. The club's going bankrupt. 6 minutes, I signed it, didn't I? A year later, the clubs have come in for me. Ron speaks to me about club sniffing around. He says, what's your contract? I said, I've got 3 years to go. I told him what I was on. He went, who signed? Why'd you sign that? Because you bullied me into signing it. I wouldn't have signed that if I was you.
Brilliant, brilliant. So you're from there, you're off again, Sheffield Wednesday, and for one of the great, well, accepted as one of the great coaches, Howard Wilkinson.
Yeah, I mean, I've got to be honest, when I went there, I knew Howard from the under-21s, and I just thought he was a very doer, gruff man. He never did an awful lot, nor said a lot with under-21s, because we had Venables and Dave Sexton. So you can imagine how bubbly they were, and Howard obviously came across as a little bit grumpy. Anyway, I get this meeting. There's no way I'm going to sign for them. I'm leaving the Albion. I went to Switzerland to do a deal with Servette. Gilesy called me, and he says, well, I went to see Gilesy about a rise. I mean, I've scored 20-something goals. So I'm thinking back, I've got to get off this contract. And like, see had gone, but Statham was still there. But a few of them were still on good money. So I've gone to see him, and I said that, since I want to meet him. So I arranged it with the secretary. Got to see Gilesy. Gilesy walks in. As he walks in the door, my missus dropped me off. There was, in the back of the paper, Arsenal in for Thompson, 400 grand. So as we're walking, I've got the paper up, like, how do I? And he went, you can put that down. So he says, what do you want? I went, well, I've been top scorer for the last 2 years since I've been here. Like, I think the very least...
Player of the season as well, if I remember.
I forgot to mention that. I tell you what, I'm slipping, like, player of the season, top goal scorer. And I says, look, I just want to... I said, I'm not the top best player at the club, so I don't expect to be the top paid player, but I need to be brought into line. So I'm thinking he's going to barter with me a little bit, but I'm going to end up about £900 a grand a week or something. He went, how do you fancy Switzerland? That was it. I went, you are. Get yourself over to Switzerland. He says, there's a club in for you. He says, meet some agents, Tommy Lawrence and that. Meet them near Barnet. He goes, I'll get you over. Go and go have a look at it. So I'm like, but it's not the English first. Go and have a look. Take my words, son. Go and have a look. Anyway, I go. We spend the night in the hotel, me, the missus and me bab. We fly over to Switzerland, take me to Cervetta, Geneva. Geneva's unbelievable, by the way. The place is different class. Take me around the ground, start showing the missus apartments, which are bigger than my house. And so, like, I'm like, this is unbelievable. Then they offer me two cars, flights home for her and the bab. My mum and dad can fly over. And they're giving us free flights. The deal was ridiculous. And it works out to something like 112 grand a year, 114 grand a year, tax-free. This is 1985.
Wow.
2 year contract. So I'm like, I'm gonna have to sign this. Same with Mrs. Think we're gonna have to sign it. She's already like, oh, the shops around here, the place is so clean. We're going to Geneva, we're gonna sign for Cervette. So they have a dinner in the night. So we sit at this table, there's lawyers there and everything, but the deal's always gone through. Like, this is the waiter, he looks across at me, keeps looking. Now, as I say, my mum, West Indian family, if I don't call my mum every 2 or 3 days, she's on the phone, I could be dead. So, like, I see this fellow looking at me. So I'm thinking, oh, she's found me. Anyway, he comes up. He says, Mr. Thompson, phone call for you. So I got up. I says, all right. So I picked the phone up. I went, you found me then. And it was Sid Lucas. And he went, Tomo, those Robin Dago bastards. He says, I've just realised, finally, that's what's happening. I said, what do you mean, Sid Lucas? He said, apparently the money was put up by Fiorentina. I was going to go to Italy. I was going to go to Tibet for a year. Then I was going to go to Fiorentina. So I'm like, what's the problem with that? Well, he says, we've sold you short, haven't we? We sold you for £500,000 or 400 grand, whatever. He says, I've asked for another 50 grand. So I've gone, Mr. Lucas, I'll give you the 50 grand out of my own pocket. Phone's gone down here. So I go back to the table, sit with the missus. She goes, she knows something's up. We go back to the hotel. I tell what's going on. She says, oh, it'll get sorted, won't it? Their clubs want it to happen. Unknown to me, they've signed Crooks and Berardi anyway with the money they're supposed to have got from me. So the agents come out in the morning, the lawyers, the deal's on hold, you've got to go back. I'm like, is this going to happen or what? Yes, it's going to happen. I go back, I get to the Albion, I pull up at the training ground, I get out of my car, and and I had a massive big, like, top Granada, looked like a gangster. So I step out of the car, Johnny Giles has flew out the dressing rooms and that. Big man, fuck off. I went, you what? He says, there's nothing down for you. Get yourself out of here. I went, what are you about? I've got a train. This is now pre-season. And he's gone, no, he says, clear off. Anyway, they bought these players. The press have got wind, something's going on. So I couldn't train. So I've had to train back at me in Coventry. So I've trained. And so in the meantime, now clubs know what's happening. So QPR come in for me. Arsenal dropped out of the bidding. Villa came in and dropped out of the bidding. Basically said, turn everyone down and you can sign. Sheffield Wednesday, there's another club, Chelsea. So in the end, I end up going to Sheffield Wednesday to have a chat. But I'm not no intention of signing. when the agents are sitting there, the same agents did my deal in service, they've come over because apparently I'm tied to them for 6 months. So I'm like, I ain't paying you. No, no, we'll work out our own payment. We go to Sheffield Wednesday. They're doing a deal. They're talking good money. I get bored. My missus is shopping and she's with Howard's wife and looking at houses and all that. And I've lost my lad. He's my boy. Anyway, I look around and he's my boy. And he's my boy. Oh, he's out on the pitch. Go out on the pitch. Because my lad always carried a football with him. So I go out on the pitch and he's smashing the ball into the goal with Howard Wilkinson. And Howard's showing it to celebrate, running off to the cop and all that. So I look and I think, it'll do for me.
Yeah,
I'll have him. Yeah. I signed 2 days later. We run around Eden Valley and I'm like, oh my, look, he's killing us. But and it was only when I went to Villa and realised how badly off we were, the training he did was years ahead. So he'd work in the back four, he'd work in midfield, different units, bring it all together. And obviously at the time, this is boring. Let's have a five-a-side. Because that's what we did at Chelsea. Yeah. We did man for man, five-a-side. And everybody just works. If you scored against me, Tom, I had to do extra work. And Norman Hunter took me for finishings. I was sharp as I've ever been. But Howard's work was so condensed and set up and working defence, midfield, attack, and different things, aspects within that. I went to Aston Villa. There was none of that. And I was like, bloody hell. I didn't realise how good Howard was until I actually left the club. But very, very good. As a coach, technically very, very good.
How big a deal to sign for your boy club, Villa?
Well, Villa tried to sign me. When they signed Withy, apparently, I think they signed Geddes at the same time, or just before they signed Geddes and Withy, they were talking about signing me. Gordon told me, he said, look, they've offered money, but it's not going to happen. Anyway, then I'm at the Albion, and it looks like I can go to the Villa, but Villa are never going to pay the money that everyone else is talking about paying. So, force her again. I'm walking off the pitch, last game of the season, Sheffield Wednesday, Aston Villa. I'm clapping the fans and all that. I'm going up the tunnel, Ron Wiley's waiting. He says, big man, would you come to the Villa? I went like a shot. So and to be fair, I've not scored enough goals at Sheffield Wednesday, so I never feel I did myself justice. The fans liked me because I worked hard and all that. But for me, it was always the currency was goals. I had to score goals and assists. That's what I was looking at. And I didn't do enough of that. So I go up the tunnel. Howard Walker's at the top of the tunnel. What are you doing? I said, I've known you since I was 14. He's my coach, my mentor. You get away from him, you come here. Anyway, Howard goes away to Mexico for the World Cup. He's working with the BBC.
That's right.
So one morning, the phone rings and he's got no telephone manner at all. Now then, oh, Gaffer, how you doing? He says, we've had an offer from Aston Villa. He says, so you can go or you can stay. It's up to you. Now, it was Villa, so I would have gone anyway, but he showed absolutely no love. If he just said, big man, it hasn't worked out this year, you've not scored enough goals, but we're going to work, we're going to do this, we're bringing this player in. It would have been a tougher decision, but in the end, the way he did, okay, I'm going. I went down, Doug said, I met Doug, Graham Turner wasn't there, but Ron Wiley and Doug, I went to Doug's house. And once Doug had finished telling me how expensive the tables were, the chairs, and how much he spent on this and that, which he got to my contract, which basically said, I'll give you £600 a week, £25,000 a year, and a Montego. And I went, right. That was it. No arguing, no, just spent, okay. I went back to tell my missus. Didn't go down too well, because obviously, living in Sheffield, we've all got friendly with the Human League and Heaven 17 and all that. You know, all that set, and we're going out to restaurants and all that. She went, you what? Boy, a dream. I've got to play for Aston Villa. This is my chance of that. But we're standing around 2 feet here. We're actually living. She was not having it. She wasn't happy. Anyway, go back to Sheffield. Go back to Aston Villa. Go back to Birmingham. Buy a lovely house. Everything's nice. I think within 2 weeks, I walked in the club. I've known Shorey for years. Shorey went to me. Big man, you're 3 years too late. Place is gone. And I think Gary's been injured a lot. So I think he's basically Gary's a bit bitter. I did training. I trained for 3 days. I'm like, fucking hell. I see my dad on the Sunday. Well, what's it like? Dad, it's not quite how I imagine it to be like. And I remember I kept saying things to him and they were going, when do you become a coach? When do you get your badges? And all I was saying was the stuff Howard was doing. I said, how come you're not doing any defensive shape? Or how come you're not doing any midfield breaking forward and joining with the strikers? How come we're so deep? And he'd be like, fuck, what's the matter with you? So in the end, it goes on. Stevie Hunt's there as well. Stevie Hunt, the same mind as me. This is not going right. The whole thing smacks of decay and basically cheap. They've gone cheap and we've paid the price. We got battered on a regular basis. I knew we were going down. We played Liverpool at Anfield. We took the lead three. In them days, Liverpool were a decent outfit. We took the lead three times. They caught us up three times. And if we'd had another 5 minutes, they'd have beat us 4-3. We went in at full time. We're fighting each other because we know we're right in the shite. And from there, it just went downhill. I got a bad injury. I missed 11 months with this injury, but they never knew what it was. So, like, I've got this injury. So I've come to my boyhood club. I'm playing for my boyhood club, got relegated from my boyhood club, got an injury. I might never play again. Doug's offered me 20 grand to retire. It couldn't, my marriage is breaking up. It couldn't go any worse, if you know what I mean.
Couldn't be worse, could it?
Yeah. And then, so like, I'm like, no, I'm not going to retire. I'm going to keep going and get myself fit in that. And luckily, Graham Taylor walked in, Jim Walker. Jim took me to a guy called Paddy Armour, who put his fingers into me and made me cry. As a grown man, he brought tears to my eyes, but found out what the problem was. Did the operation. Graham got me fit, and I was off and running again.
Graham Taylor was your manager, wasn't he? And you mentioned the Swindon. And I remember working for BRNB, and I covered that game, and I had to go in the dressing room, and Middlesbrough hadn't finished their game. And
Graham,
because it wasn't the sky then or anything. I had to tell Graham what the score was from down the line.
Yeah.
So he knew he was promoted. But what a day that was.
Brilliant day. I mean, we went, Graham had, on the Friday, he'd opened, not champagne, but cheap fizz, and sat us all down with a little glass and said, congratulate yourself, you've done ever so well. And we had a brilliant season, because if you look at the team, I came in about the November time, and like, we went on a run away from home. We weren't getting beat. We lost our way a little bit just towards the end of the season. But we'd done enough. We should have gone straight up, to be honest. We've had the little drink, got to play Swindon. There's no nerves. We know our jobs. We've got to do the business. I think I hit the crossbar with the header. Platy's had an effort. But we always thought, one goal, dude, we'll get the one goal. Defensively, we were quite strong. But we couldn't get the goal. And in the end, we've got this 8 minutes of wandering around and like waiting to hear what's going on. Anyway, news comes through. And I remember there's pictures of us all like bare-chested and drinking champagne and all that. I remember looking and saying to Macca, look at that knob. And looked at Graham Taylor, and he's sitting there, a bit self-satisfied. He's done the business and that. But he's already ticking people. You know when someone's mentally ticking people off? Like, yeah, I can get rid of him. Oh, he can go.
Planning for the future.
Yeah. And I went, no, you're back. We've not even got promoted yet. And Macca went, that's the life, isn't it? And I thought about it. That's what good managers do. And Gordon Cowans came in that summer, and we just started building again. But as a manager, very, very organised, very forthright in what he's trying to do, very disciplined, knew exactly what his plan was. Me and him fell out fell out and never spoke for about 12 years, 10, 12 years.
Really?
Walked into the expansion cricket yard, yeah. Once I left, the atmosphere between us was terrible. But I think I played for Crystal Palace against Aston Villa, my debut, and I scored for Palace on my debut, and it, not cost Villa the title, but they were going for, they finished in second place or whatever. So that's the first time we spoke again. He shook my hand and I was like, I'm gutted because it's against Villa, but I'm so glad it's you. Like, it was one of them.
Yeah.
So like, that was the only time we spoke. So 12 years after I leave, my mate Marty Smith's got a box at East Baston. He come down and watch a bit of 2020. So I get down with my nephew, walk in, and like, he goes, oh, you got your mates here. I'm like, who's that then? He went, Graham Taylor. I went, see you later. Went to, don't be like that, big man. Anyway, I'm hovering about, we're having a beer and that. And before you know it, the two of us, we had a beer, we sat down next to each other. And I'm like, now then, tell me about this. What have you done this for? And he sat down, explained it all to me. He said, listen, you had the bad injury and you were, what was classed then as a championship player, we've gone into the Premier League. He says, but your ego and how loud you are, because one of the first conversations he had with me, he said, you can lead people the right or the wrong way. He says, I don't know how to take you.
You're influential.
That's the word. That's the word I was grasping for. So he said, I couldn't have you on the bench. I couldn't have you around the squad if you weren't going to be a positive battery. So he said, in the end, it made sense to let you go. He said, because I was actually running the club, whereas you thought you were running the club. He said, so one of us had to go. You know what I mean? Why don't you put it like that? So, yeah.
Is it true? I heard a rumour that you knocked out a teammate at Villa.
Oh, Derek Manfield, yeah.
I know Derek. He's a good lad, Derek.
Oh, he's. Derek came from
Everton.
And he's come in and he's obviously, he's quick with the Crips and that, but he's a nice player. I've played against him in Manfield and Ratcliffe, sorry, for years. And I usually sit in the South, or oh, he scored a goal, like, you know, they terrorised him. Anyway, he comes to the club, and I think there was a bit of harbouring a little bit. There's still a bit of feeling there. Anyway, any little quit, anything happened, Derek, he was on me like. So, but, you know, dressing rooms, there's banter, and it goes on a little bit. Anyway, the one day, I fell out with Graham. I fell out with everybody massively. And I got ill. I had the flu. So I was living at my mum's. Missus threw me out the house. So, like, my mum rang up. She said, oh, Gary's at home. He's ill. He can't come in today. So Jim Walker says, can you get him to the phone? Got me to the phone. And he said, Tom, Gaffer's not having it. He says, you've got to come in. Are you joking? I've got to drive all the way from Kingsley or Maypole all the way to Bodymore. Yeah, you've got to come in. I said, I've got the flu. Anyway, I drove in. Had a look at me, Jim. He says, the doctor's coming at 12 o'clock. This is now 10:30. I went, what am I going to do? He says, well, Gaffer wants you to wait. Graham's now just messing me about a little bit. Yeah. So I thought, I'll put up with it. Like. So anyway, he says, I waited. And he says, well, get your kit on while you're here. He says, have a wander around the pitch. Get some fresh air. I went, no, I don't feel very well. Jim went, Tom, do yourself a favour. Put your kit on. Put my kit on. Walk around the pitch. I can't help myself. Someone shoots over the bar. Why are we paid for him? All that sort of stuff was going off, like, and they give me the banter back as well. Like, Taylor is trying to have a training session. I think John Ward's the thing, and I'm piping up every now and again, walking around shouting, "How much? Oh, he's miscontrolled it again!" And all that sort of stuff going on. Anyway, Kim comes over after a bit and says, "Listen, big man, one of the lads has got a knock. You're gonna have to go on." Oh, yeah, I've got the flu. Yeah, Jim's a lovely fellow. Like, Jim, you're gonna have to go on. So anyway, I've got my gear. So Ebo and Derek Manfield are the first team centre backs. So I go up to them before this 20 minutes game starts, and I said, "Listen, lads. Normally I'd have it with you all day. You know what it's all about. But I said today I'm feeling a little bit fragile. If you could just leave me alone, I promise I won't get involved in it. Just leave me alone, please. I feel really bruised all over." Ebo's brilliant. I love Alan Evans. I love him. He's a warrior. Love Ebo to death. He went, "You're like kicking a man when he's down." He said, "Nah, big man. To do your thing. Mountfield, you're having it." Like, you what? You're having it. So we start playing. He smashed me in the back of the head first. He's come over the top of me, one header. And you know, when you're bruised, you don't even want to touch the ball. I'm just like, I just let this finish. He's caught me a couple of times, didn't he? And I've turned around and goes, "You catch me again, I'm going to knock you out." Yeah, right. Israel taught you. Next time he smashed me in the back. I punched him, started walking off the pitch. He's Sparko. Taylor's chasing after me. "You're sacked. Fuck off. I quit." So he follows me in like, "You're fucking say, I'll fuck off." So he's gone on and on. Got me gear, went home. He got someone to ring the next day. Come in, you're going to have a meeting. Went in for a meeting. It's supposed to be him and the chief exec, the secretary, Steve Stride. It was just Graham. And basically he said, "Look, this isn't going to work at the minute. I can't have you thumping players and all that like." So he says, basically, "If you just keep your nose clean, we will find you a club." Man City were after me. Spurs apparently were linked with me. He says, "We'll sort something out." So I says, "Yeah, I'm not trouble. I am not trouble at all." But so in the end, I think they turned down Man City. I had a chat with Oxford. That never worked out. And then Watford came in for me Christmas Eve. And that Villa still owed me. That 25 grand signing on fee, I tried to take it to pay for my brother's hospital bill. And like, all of a sudden it disappeared, didn't it? That was another reason. It was just a lot of things. But in the end, like, Graham, to be fair, he made sure I got the money. So I signed for Watford. And I signed for Watford, about 12 o'clock on a Friday afternoon. And I sat in my hotel room, crying my eyes out. For about an hour after, I was like, "What have you done?" But I had to leave Villa. I had to get away from Villa to try and get my career going a little bit.
As if that wasn't bad enough, Graham Taylor didn't like your dress sense anyway, did he?
Oh. I told Frankie the other day, my first three meetings with Graham were horrendous. We've got relegated. Dogs turned up in the big Bentley. They told us to sit in the canteen and wait. Anyway, door opens. Doug Ellis comes in. "Gentlemen, the new manager, Aston Villa." Graham breezes in. "Thank you, Mr. Ellis. You can close the door on your way out." He says, "Right then. First thing you lot are going to say, who's he played for? What's he ever done in his life?" He said, "I played for, I think it was Grimsby and Scunthorpe. Lincoln and Grimsby." He said, "Career ended at 28 with an injury. Blah, blah, blah. I've done this, I've done that." He said, "So we'll take that straight away. So don't turn around and say to me how many caps you got, whatever. I'm not having any of that. This place is shambles." Then proceeded to say to, I think it was Dorigo first. "Dorigo, have you given your best for Aston Villa?" Tony Dorigo, "Yeah, yeah. Well, how come you've got a deal lined up to go to Chelsea? It's been sorted out since Christmas." Dorigo, bright red face. Me and Stevie on the game. Who's he? He's letting him have it. So then he goes to Paul Elliott, slams into Paul Elliott about a deal he's got. He went round them all. You give your best for the club. He's got an answer for everybody. Then he didn't even look at me. And he went, and you just pointed. He went, you run around, socks around your ankles, don't score no goals and that. He says, now apparently you're injured. He says, you're actually no good to anybody. You might as well just fuck off now. And I was like, yeah, all right. Yeah. You still here? So I had to walk out of the room. So I walked out of the room. But when I saw Auntie after, we were all laughing, going like, he's going to really shake this place up. It's just what we need. Next day, I drive into training ground. I'm injured, so I'll get in a bit early. Anyway, as I drive in, Harrison, Taylor and Bobby Downs are standing there, all suited and booted at the door. So Warren Aspinall is walking back towards the cars. So obviously, he looks like George Formby. He's got the teeth, hasn't he? So I've gone, Forms, how you doing? He went, good luck. Just kept walking, got in his car, drove off. So back in the day, the dressing rooms, the change room, canteen was sort of there. The pitches was there to your right. Yeah. So I thought, I've started walking out towards the pitches. I'm pulling bit the grass up, testing the air and all that. So I'm trying to come around the back of them. Like, anyway, they let me do it. Get around the back. I'm about to put my hand on the door. He goes, can I ask you a question? All right, yeah. He says, where do you live? He says, Bassett's Pole. It's about 5 minutes from here. He says, describe your house. I went, well, it's 5 bedrooms. It's got a sauna, jacuzzi. I've got a study. I've got a bar. I've got this and that. Like, I've got foundation dug out for a swimming pool. He goes, yeah, you've done all right, yeah. I says, well, yeah, yeah. He says, what do you think your neighbours think when they see you of a morning? I says, they probably think there's time to go to training. He goes, no, he says, they probably say, look at that scruffy git. He says, you're absolute fucking disgrace. He said, look at you. Now, bear in mind, I was wearing, I had a black leather jacket on, white T-shirt, blue jeans, no socks, trainers were smart.
The Fonz.
He went, you, look at you, you're dressed like the Black Fonz. He goes, get yourself fucking back home. He says, when you come back, he says, you wear slacks or a shirt. He says, and or you wear tracksuit, slacks or shirt. That's it. He says, now fuck off on. He goes, you're going to dress, you're going to represent Aston Villa, you're going to dress properly. He goes, off you go. I went, yeah, okay. Got it, Gaffer, from tomorrow. He went, go home now.
Now?
Went back. My missus was like, what are you doing back? I told her story. She pissed herself laughing. Like, went back. But it was exactly what we needed. Made us wash our own kit. Made us just basically clean our own boots. He said, I'll make you fall in love with the game again. I'll get you back to where you was. Then what he did, he took every player, had a meeting with every player, and that's what they thought was wrong. Now I'm still injured. In our meeting, so this is the third meeting, so the two I had with have been horrendous. The third one, I think I can get me, you know, say a little bit, say what I'm not happy with. So I've not hammered the medical staff, but I've just said, well, you know, the treatment, no one kind of knew what was wrong with me, blah, 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 still don't and all that. So we're going through the full bit, and he says, I manage England youth. I went, yeah. I said, I know. Because my little brother had been in England youth with him. But I played against Watford, a League Cup quarterfinals, scored about 3 goals. Me and Bobadak scored loads of goals. And I knew he half liked that type of player. Like, so I'm thinking, get myself fit, I'll be half all right. He says, yeah. So we had this chat. What was all wrong with the club? What's going wrong? How do I think I can get myself fit and that? He says, yeah. He says, your little brother, he says, I like him. He's funny, he's bubbly. He says, he's got a good way about him, good ability as well. He says, yeah, he's got a good character, he says. And in a dressing room, he says, people sort of gravitate to him. He says, you, on the other hand, that was it. He never said another word. And I went, well, me on the other hand, he went, yeah, I'm still trying to work you out. Close the door on your way out. So my first 3 meetings, I'm thinking, he's not having me at all. Luckily, I was injured because he sold Steinrod. Andy Gray left and all of them. And I think Steve Hunt retired. If I'd have been fit, I'm sure he'd be trying to get me out the door as well. As it turned out, I was handy for him to score the goals, get us promoted. Like, I don't mention that so often, but yeah, that's what I'm...
I know you... Why? I mean, all right, you went to Cardiff and you've talked about that, but you ended up at Northampton. Why? I mean, you'd been around, you played at the top level, you played in Europe, you played England. Why do you got to work with Akers at Northampton?
Well, I'd known Akers. I played against Akers a load of times, so I didn't know him really well, but I sort of met him on the circuit and all that. Like, he's always a mouthy one, but it gets other people to get involved in all the stupidity. I think it might be Gordon Chisholm or someone. I've laid him out on a playing. He was playing for Sunderland. I'm playing for the Albion, and Giles, he was desperate to nail me. saying, I'm looking at the video. You've punched him. You've knocked him out, ain't you? And I went, no, Gaffer. I just ran past him. And the next thing, he's on the floor, Sparko. Like, but Akers was the one saying to him, like, because he was giving me abuse. And Akers said, be his friend. Be nice to him. And he'll be like a pussycat. If you want to row with him, he will fight you. And in the end, like, he said, I keep telling him. He tells everyone the story. Said, next thing, Thomas elbowed him. He's out smart cold. Anyway, I've seen Akers a few times on the circuit. And then I was suspended a couple of times for Cardiff and that. And they'd send me to watch Blues because Blues in the same division, Barry Fry and all that. So I'd go and watch Blues, make a report and all that. And then I got this phone call. And Akers rang and he said, big fella, we're bottom of the table. We've got, I think I had 10 games to go, 10 or 12 games. He said, I need to sign a centre forward. Good leader. I've got Ray Warburton. I've got Ian Sampson. I need a good leader up front. He said, you don't have to play every week. He said, but I need you in there. You're bubbly in the dressing room. We keep everyone going. I need you. So I'm like, oh, no, I'm not really interested. Like, come to Cardiff. You're going to give me another contract. Yarrowford took over as manager at Cardiff. So I'm going to get another contract. So I said, no. He said, big man, your missus just had a baby. You're back in the Midlands. You don't have to train every day. So in the end, I've come for a conversation. Gonna talk. And I thought it was still the old ground with three sides and all that, with the cricket ground. They got this nice new stadium. So I look around, oh, this is nice. Akers shows me around and all that, says what he's planning to do and the players he's going to bring in and all that. Little realising, you knew Akers better than me. Half of it's guff, innit? But he's giving me all the guff and that. So in the end, he says, right. He says, I need you to sign this contract so you can play tomorrow. I went, oh, no, I need time to think about it. I talked to the missus, but like, big man, I need you to play tomorrow. Like, you know, there's a big shaped hole, number nine shaped hole in the team. I need you. Anyway, somehow he talked me into signing a blank contract. I'm 35, by the way. I signed a blank contract. Like, I signed his contract to that. And he says, don't worry, we'll sort it all out with the chairman. I think at Cardiff, I was getting about, say, £1,400 a week or something like that. So I played the game. Great atmosphere, great lads and that. And I get caught up in it. David Norton's there, Bernie Gallagher, Andy Woodman. We had some decent players for the level of that. And like, I go see Akers about 3 weeks later. We pay packet comes through. I went, what's this? Big man, the chairman. He wasn't having it. He's saying, you've signed now. You can do some coaching with the kids and all that. And I was like, he's pulling my pants down. But the more time I spent with Akers, the more I realised that was the norm, really. But to be fair, I loved it in Northampton. Like, the atmosphere was brilliant. The lads was really good. And it wasn't so much about money. I was back home, and in a way, it was really good for just being around me people and all that, being back in the Midlands. So, yeah, it worked out nice. But Akers, and he let me do some coaching. And he taught me an awful lot, to be fair. So, like, I'll give him stick in that, but he knows I love him. He's different class.
Who's the players you've played with who have not been the brightest tools in the box?
A lot of people would say Tom English wasn't very incredibly intelligent. I'm just trying to think. Most footballers are sharp. Most people are very, very, they're witty, they're sharp. They've half got an banter. Idea about what's going on. Yeah, good bat. The banter's always top draw. Very, very sharp. I'm just trying to think of anyone that's really dense. There's never been too many. I mean, you get somewhere like QPR, they're all sharp. They're all like on the ball, all companies and that. They're
white
very, very...
White boys.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, when they first went there, Palace, for example, they'd say Sulaco wasn't the brightest of that. But I think it's because he was young and he was just gullible. Because Richard Shaw and Sulaco.
What a good player he was.
We ended up playing at Coventry and that. And I'd see him down there. But Johnny Sal, all you could hear when Mark Bright and Ian Wright played, Sulaco! They just coach him all the time. Because they used to say, Bright used to say, if you throw a cross in and we score a goal, I'll give you 50 quid. So he always had an incentive. Sulaco, if you watch him play, love to check back, love to go to cross, check back, beat another man and all that. And they got him out of that by just saying, just get the thing in the box. But his name was mentioned so often. They didn't hate him. They just slaughtered him all the time. Glyn Hodges was there. And Glyn, on the left, Glyn won't have it. He'll throw it the ball in when he's good and ready. But Glyn Hodges, excellent footballer, like, but he wasn't standing for any of that. But the Palace boys was brighter. I mean, like most of the clubs have been that. People have been bright as a button. Very, very sharp people. Like I say, Tom wasn't the sharpest. Bodak's mouth would run away with himself regardless. No matter who was there, he'd say stuff and drop himself in it at all times. But generally, most footballers are quite worldly wise, quite astute.
You've become a pundit, and I know that when people let players run off them, you get angry, rightly so. But you once caught out yourself, weren't you? Coventry against Villa. You should have been
This is 2 days before I broke my leg. I'm on top of the world. I've just been called up for the under-21s. Life's sweet. Life's going well. I'm scoring goals. I'm going to get new contracts. Everything's going really well. My job is to mark Allen Evans at set pieces. They always did that. You know, in them days, the near post corner. Ball kept to near post, flick on, so everyone piling at the far post. Evo's waiting at the far post. Ball's been flicked on. I look at our centre, I think he's going to win that. So I edge out the pitch, flicks it on, Evo heads it in. So I go in, half time, and that thing straight away, I've got to apologise. So I walk in, hands up, lads, I've got to say, Jim Alton, you fucking, and they're pushing me against the wall, you fucking, you lazy, you can't do your job in that. And I'm going like, gaffer, gaffer, Gordon Moore's the manager, like, gaffer, gaffer, yeah, he's fucking right. So I got no joy from anybody. Anyway, I get the equaliser, so we draw 1-1 at Villa Park. By the way, my old man and his mates, like, took loads of drink off me in the bar, like, never give me any credit at all, like, scored a great goal. Bobby McDonald crossed it, and I scored a great header. Top of the world. 2 days later, we've got a training session because we're at the FA Cup. And normally, they just run on a Friday. They've decided to have a practice match, had a practice match, and they got this trialist kid in who'd been training with the reserves. And he was a big sort of left-back stroke centre-half, played centre-half, chasing the ball down the channel. I've done the first centre-half. I'm coming towards the ball, spunning behind him. He's coming across. And I see him coming, and I think, oh, I just touched this past him, and I'm gone. Touched it past him. Next thing I look up, Jim Holton stroking my head and Jim Blythe, and they're going, oh, look at your leg, big man. Look at my leg, and I'll pass out again. Then the groundsman has to take me in his van to the hospital. I'm at the hospital, and basically they end up like, I've got my kit on. They can't operate because I've had breakfast. I don't normally have breakfast, but I had breakfast this morning. They couldn't operate, couldn't do anything with me, so I had to sit there for 3 hours, like, while they're waiting for it to, obviously, dinner to get out before they could anaesthetise me and all that. But in that, it worked out right because I didn't realise at the time I broke my leg in 3 places. At the time, the way that the state of the injury was, they were on about pinning it. If they'd have pinned it, I wouldn't have played. So, like, this doctor, Mr. Aldridge, he insisted on doing it his way, pushing it together and holding
it. Knitting it properly. That's not knitting it properly then so you could play it in.
Yeah, but they were just going to... Because that when I went into the ward, I woke up and everyone's still motorcycle accidents. They've all got big tents over their legs and all that, and they've got pins going through all their legs and all that. And apparently that's what they had planned for me. But in the end, he said he's done it properly. He's insisted what they do. I had to go see him every couple of months, x-ray, take the plaster cast off, check the leg, clap it up again. And like in the end, it got me back playing. I was out for 11 months. But that was... possibly not my career-ending injury.
Which was, a terrible injury that you recovered from. But just go back to that game where you didn't mark your man and you scored the equaliser. But even then, you couldn't help yourself at full-time, could you, when you come in the dressing room?
Well, as I walked in, I went, there you go, I'll put food on your table again. And they eviscerated me. They just slaughtered me. You, we'd have won 1-0. They killed me. And even Milner just shook his head. He's like, complete idiot. And I kept thinking, why do I say things? But you know, when you go in and you're thinking, oh, the comedy angle. I soon learned, to be fair. But they were very good with me, to be fair. They put up with an awful lot of stupidity from me. But they're good lads in that.
Just before we come to the end, management, did it not suit you, Thomas? Management?
Someone asked me this the other day. I got to say, Akers, I took the reserve side with Akers. Well, not with Akers. Akers used to play in reserves. And he had to play centre-half, didn't he? And, like, the amount of times I've had to try and bring the manager off the pitch, like, it's not a good task in that.
But we won the manager. All the best.
Exactly, yeah. McAnally was there one time, and he went, get him off! I mean, he's coming off. I've seen it up, like, Gaffer, no, fuck off, I'm staying on. Gaffer, come on, fuck off, I'm staying on. In the end, I've got a bottle here. Okay, do something else. But Akers weren't having it. But, I mean, to be fair, I'd coached the reserve side. We won the reserve league. I've got a taste for it. Holloway takes me to Bristol Rovers. He wants me to do the same with his boys, but he's allowing me to watch the opposition, plan how to beat the opposition. So I'm learning all aspects of the game. But I've no intention of being a manager. Don't want to be a manager. Love coaching, love working with kids and that, or young players and that. Enjoy it and all that. Holloway gets a sack. And because, as you say, doing the punditry, I can warble. So people ask me a question, yeah, I can talk and that. Penrice didn't like to do that. So I started having to do it and they ended up basically looking to me to be the manager. And I was no intention of doing it. I've ended up taking the team a little bit. And then I didn't enjoy it because we had to go and see, after a game, you'd have to go and see the board and it's in the boardroom. You have a drink and all that. And they were like, why are you playing? Why didn't you do this? Why didn't you do that? And I realised then it's because they pay their money, they want to have a say. And they always wanted to know the team. That was used to bug me. 12 o'clock, they want to know the team. I'm like, no. That's our team. But Penny said, you got to play the game. You've got to keep them sweet. You can't keep doing that. Anyway, we go in the boardroom after a game, and they'd be saying, well, why do you do that, Mr. Manager? Why do you do that? And he's trying to talk to me, and I'd be like, he's at the time. I've got to go. And I just clear off because my daughter, obviously, my missus are in Birmingham. So I'm like, I'm going home. And I just leave it. Penny kept saying to me, big man, you've got to stay. You've got to listen to him. Let them have their say for 15 minutes. So I never did any of that. And then we beat Derby County in the FA Cup, third round of the FA Cup at Pride Park. And all of a sudden, they've got to give me the job. I don't want it. They don't want to give it me, but they've got to give me the job. I've took the job. And Phil Morrison, the agent, rang me. About a week later, he says, you realise you're the heater, don't you? What are you on about? He says, it's a term in American football. You're keeping the seat warm for somebody. And I went, who's that then? He went, Ray Graydon. So as it turned out, that's exactly what happened. Ray got the job that with three or four games to go. I think we played Kidderminster. The Clarkie was playing for Kidderminster. We beat them. We're staying up, definitely. Everything's sorted. Like, I'm being lauded around the pitch and all that. And I'm half thinking, I could be the Black Alex Ferguson here. Anyway, the next day, I got to see the chairman about me, the budget we got. And he keeps saying, look at the grass, isn't it beautiful? Look at the grass and the stuff. He said, what are we going to do with this pitch? You're doing all that. And I went, Mr. C, the budget's going to be shit. You procrastinated for England, like. And he, as he said, he went and pulled an envelope out of his top pocket. And he went, what do you think that is, Blue? And I always knew, I was there 4 years. When he called you Blue, he was about to do you. As soon as he said, well, do you think that is Blue? And I was like, you're joking. Me cards. He went, yeah. And he went, this really hurts me to do that. Like, spare me all the bollocks. Make sure you pay me and all that. Anyway, the fight don't get me money out of them. But then I realised management wasn't really for me. I went to Brentford with Wally Downs within 2 or 3 months as his number two. Enjoyed the number two role. I was set out to be a coach, not a manager. I can't do the politics. Obviously, older now, I kind of know how to play it and keep people sweet. That time, I'm going to be Fergie. And I'm not having it. You're not telling me how to pick my team. And then when the fans boo me for picking the team you want to pick, I get the sack. I'm not having it.
Did you try I've forgotten. You did, or have I got this wrong? You did try an agency for a while, didn't you, being an agent?
Yeah, well, because I didn't have my exams, I had to, Neil Sillett, who I've known since I was a kid, Neil's a proper agent. He wanted me as a consultant because he had Steve Elliott, Ryan Taylor, Rory Delap. He had four or five players like that, what you say, average premiership players, but on good money. But he wanted the next batch underneath. So I was running around, nicking players there and all that. But I found that I didn't really like it. There was a lot of cutthroat backstabbing going on. I didn't enjoy it at all. And like, most of them, it's funny because if you don't play for a while, people forget who you played and all that. These kids thought I was their butler. All they thought I was there to was organise nights out in clubs and all that. They'd ring me on a Friday. I'd say to them, if you want to go to a club in London, say you're playing in London, and you're organised to go out, let me know on the Tuesday, Wednesday. We've got a department called Fluff, and they sort out
where you want to go.
Clubs and, Saturday night, big man, you know I love you. I need 5 tickets, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, I can't help you now. Oh, what kind of agent are you? I'm not an agent. I'm not your butler. And in the end, I had a thing with, I can't remember, there was a kid, left winger. He used to play for Villa. I signed him and he actually thought I was his butler. I picked him up the one day and he said, I took him back to Northampton. And he said, he rang me. He says, oh, my car's broke down. I said, yeah. He says, well, Shay Gibbons says, if you're any kind of agent, you pick me up, you take me to my home. And I went, what the fuck's he got to do with Shay Gibbons? Yeah, well, that's what Shay said. So I ring Neil Sillett. I said, listen, Sill. And I explained to Sill to go, take my fuck yourself. He went, no, big man, just do us a favour. Just go and pick him up. Just go and take him back to his yard. So I picked him up, took him back to his house, had a cup of tea with the mum and dad and all that. Like, anyway, as I'm walking out, he goes to me, if you're here for about 5 o'clock on Sunday, we can be back in Birmingham for about 6 and that. Then you can clear off and do your stuff. And I went, if you was Frank Lampard, I'd be here at 4 o'clock. But you ain't fucking Frank Lampard. And that was basically the end of it. So like, they just seem to think that you're going to be there at the beck and call. And I wouldn't do that to people when I was in my pomp. So I weren't having it. So, I did a bit of that, but not really, didn't enjoy it.
Just finally, the book, Don't Believe a Word, has done ever so well, hasn't it? What inspired you to do that?
Well, I think my mum passing and my dad and everything that was going on. And Bill has always said, if you got to do a book, man, you've got loads of stories, you've got to do a book. And I've never really been that interested, not bothered about it. Anyway, I met him and Stuart Curtis one day. We had a couple of beers and they were saying, oh, you've got to do the book, you've got to do the book. Stuart showed me the publishing house, showed me how he'd do it and all that. And in the end, I found myself saying yes. We had another couple of beers. And then I thought, what am I doing? It's going to be a load of hard work. But I had the dictaphone. And any stories I remembered, I'd just say it's a dictaphone. Bill would then come back to me. He'd write stuff down. He'd send me bits of love. So every 6 weeks, I'd go and sit with Bill and talk for about 3 or 4 hours, drinking copious amounts of alcohol, talking about myself. What's not to like? So it worked out very nice.
Where can people get it, Gary?
It's like Curtis Sports, you can get it from. It's if you type in at Curtis Sports, at Curtis hashtag underscore sport, it'll come up on the book. There's 6 or 7 books they're doing at the minute, but mine seems to be selling pretty well. I'm getting very good reviews as well. So yeah, it's well worth getting.
Absolutely is. I've read it. It's, I've not finished it yet, but I'm well through it. And it's a great read. It's a bloody big book.
Well, when it first came out, some of my workmates were going, $17.99? And I went, you've not seen the size of it. I said, loads of pictures, but it's a fair size book, to be fair. It's a decent size book. There's loads of pictures for like yourself, Tom. But yeah, I'm quite proud of it now. And the way my mum went and everything, I'm pleased that my boy that's got something to look at after. I mean, the grandkids call me Grandad Woofle. They wanted to see what Woofle's done all his life. So yeah, they enjoy it.
Tomo, it's been absolutely amazing as always. It's just like sitting in the press boxes with you, pal. Thanks for being on the Games Gone podcast. Thanks very much.
No problem. Happy days. I love you, Tom. Thank you very much. Cheers, Kim.